This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.
Mm-hmm. And so we kind of became quick buddies, but I had to keep reminding myself, I'm like, this is Louis C.K., this is insane. And then I got an email one time just asking if I could open for him in East Hampton in the Thanksgiving weekend. And then I got wild food poisoning, not from what he fed us. The night before, I got so sick I couldn't do the show. And then fun fact twist, Jerry Seinfeld filled in for me. I made the newspaper in New York. I was in the New York Post. It said when young up-and-coming comedian Joe List got sick, Jerry Seinfeld filled in.
Hot Breath.
What up, Hot Breath of Verse? We are back at it. Welcome to the Hot Breath Podcast, your weekly guide to comedy mastery. This is your host, Joel Byers. Today is a very exciting episode. So you know what time it is. Hot Breath. Oh, hot brethren and sisterin. I'm recording this live from the parking lot of the Comedy Zone in Charlotte, North Carolina. I just headlined a show up here, and before I headed back, I realized, hey, I need to record my intro and outro for the podcast on Monday, because you know every Monday we're dropping dope comedy game on you, and I can't let you down regardless of my travels. So I'm also a little under the weather. I've been doing Whole 30. This is now day 15. A lady at the show told me, oh, that's all the toxins getting out of your body. So apparently by next week, I'm going to be feeling amazing. But right now, my body hates me. But I'm still doing this for the culture. So this episode today, you guys have really, really, really shown support of the Mark Normand episodes we just posted the past 2 weeks. So I thought in that spirit, I would release our interview with the co-host of Mark Normand's podcast. He has a podcast called Tuesdays with Stories. It's with Mark Normand and today's guest, Joe List. Yes, that is right. Joe List. I was able to interview him while he was in Atlanta at the Red Clay Comedy Festival. He is an amazing writer, amazing performer, a comedian we can all learn from just on his attention to details. So I think you're really going to get some nice tidbits and comedy game on this one. All I ask, the show is free. The only fee, spread the word. Tell another comic out at an open mic. I was at the Comedy Zone here in Charlotte, and several people from the scene came up and showed support of the podcast and were fans and just were so down for all the comedy knowledge being shared. So salute to everyone that I got to talk to today. Salute to you listening and that are sharing and spreading the word and contacting my guests. A lot of you reached out to Mark Normand about his interviews. So if you enjoy this episode today, please reach out to Joe List and let him know you really enjoyed this episode. That is how the Hot Breath episode spreads. You can also subscribe on iTunes to keep up with our weekly episodes. But really sharing it, rating and reviewing it, that's the best way. Visiting our website, checking out all the cool content we have over there, including merch, including a way to support the podcast. So all I ask, check it out, hotbreathpodcast.com. You can go to my website, joelbyerscomedy.com. There's links to the classes I'm doing over there as well as information about the one-on-one sessions I do. And I also do set reviews. People have sent me their five-minute sets to get feedback on. So I'm happy to help however I can. So get into this episode, enjoy it, share it. And there's only one thing left to do. And that is inhale a hot breath with Joe List.
Hey, what's up, man?
What's up, dude?
Come on in.
I'm Joel, man.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Nice to see
you. Cool. Is this all right? I mean, is this weird?
This is going to be great. No, no, no.
Sorry, it's dark in here. That's not my fault. That's this fucking weird-ass hotel.
No, it's all right. You're being very hospitable.
Thank you. I try to be very hospitable. I like it.
Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, man. For sure. How was Mindy? That must have been fun.
Mindy was great.
Man. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I want to listen to that.
Yeah, just her perspective, just, you know, having the artist background overall, so.
Right, right.
Like, starting off as an artist and then moving into photography, like, there's a lot of good insight.
Oh, great. I'm going to listen to it. Is this a weekly podcast?
Or? This is a weekly podcast. I release one every Monday at 8 a.m.
Oh, great. And is it mostly comedy or the arts or what?
Yeah, it's been primarily comedy. So I was like, let me start a podcast with that in mind. So then it's just kind of grown beyond Atlanta comedy. And now I think I'm going to start maybe taking it just to, I kind of finally figured out the whole point of it is just to learn.
Right, right.
And like to learn about the person. And I found that's what my listeners like. And what I've gotten the most feedback on is when just kind of the ABCs of their craft.
Yeah.
So that's... And I mean, you being willing to do it is
perfect, happy to man. Do it. For sure, man.
A fellow podcaster, of course, yours, Tuesdays with Stories.
Yeah.
But,
I don't know. Are you comfortable with the chair moving? I mean, I can
move. I'm cool with,
that's what I'm gonna move mine. It's a little more of a.
Yeah, I mean, a little more body language.
There, yeah.
Now we're
cooking with.
Now we're.
Jizz.
Is that what you divert to? You like masturbation and
porn?
Yeah,
I mean,
it's kind of like your
weird or awkward, but sometimes other.
I love how that's how you break awkwardness is just with something. Let me top this awkwardness with something even more awkward.
Get weird, yeah.
Well, yeah. Thanks. Thanks for doing this. If you could just say your full name into the microphone, please.
Yeah, sure. My full name is Joseph List.
All right, Joseph List, welcome to the Hot Breathiverse.
Oh, thank you. Oh, so we're started. We're underway here.
We're here, yeah.
All right, great.
We're doing it.
I always get excited. That moment where we're like, all right, this is happening now. Then I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, we're in the now.
Yeah.
We're in this present moment that'll never happen again.
We are. It's already over. That moment's over. This is a new moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, shit, that one's gone now. It's exciting. We're inching closer to death.
Well, it's exciting to have you on here because... You know, we're here at the Red Clay Comedy Festival, who you're an awesome participant in, of course.
Thank you.
And what I'd love to know, just because this is an Atlanta comedy-based podcast, what is kind of your experience with Atlanta comedy overall?
I don't have a ton of experience. I have some friends from Atlanta. I've performed here. Atlanta is the only city I've ever missed a show in, which was happened years ago. I was opening for Nick DiPaolo on the road at the old Punchline, which is no longer there.
Yeah, they moved.
And it was like a Saturday night, and this is in my drinking days. And like Friday, I just had a couple too many. I was all hungover and out of sorts. And I just didn't know what time the show started. I thought it was an 8 p.m. show, but it was a 7. And so I showed up at like 7:45.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like heard comedy happening, and I was like, what's going on here? And they're like, the show started 45 minutes ago, so I missed my set. They weren't too upset, and they still paid me, and so it wasn't a big deal. But so anyways, I did that 1 week at the Punchline back in 07 or so, and then I featured for my friend Tommy Jonigan here a few years ago.
Yeah, the Improv, right?
The Improv, yeah.
That was the first time I saw you live.
Oh, cool.
Was when like I saw you had to kind of like wrestle the crowd. That was...
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember that.
Yeah, I remember like they weren't really coming around, and then through that 20 minutes, I remember by the end, you had them in your hand, and I was wow, that's how you actually control a crowd to go in your direction. So
yeah, I kind of forgot about that weekend, but now I'm remembering it as I... Remember it.
Yeah.
I guess it's something I forgot the weekend. I just didn't put any effort into remembering.
Well, you're busy, yeah.
Yeah. But I did that. And then last week I opened for Louis C.K. at the Fox Theater.
Yeah.
And so that's been the majority of my Atlanta comedy experience. And I'm good buddies with Noah Garden Schwartz.
Nice, yeah.
And
he's been on here.
Yeah, a couple of those guys. Rob Hayes, I like. And. So, yeah, so I know a few of those
You
guys.
Went head-to-head with Atlanta comic Clayton English?
Clayton English, yes. I'll hold a trivia spot in Atlanta comedy. I was defeated by Clayton English. And I just opened for him the other day here. Or I did a set in front of him, I don't know.
Yeah, that was the opener. Yeah. You opened for him, yeah.
So that was really nice of them to... It was kind of a last-minute thing, but it was really nice of them to have me, and it was good to see him.
Yeah. What's cool in just hearing you in this present moment talk about your experience with Atlanta Comedy and just the growth you went from, oh, I was at the old Atlanta Punchline to the new Atlanta Improv. Oh, and then I was at the Fox with Louis C.K. Have you heard of Louis C.K.? How did you become his opener? Because this is an international tour where you've gone with him. How'd that happen?
It's pretty insane, and I don't really know. He saw me at the Comedy Cellar. I work at the Comedy Cellar a lot, and he's there. That's kind of his home club, his main club in New York. And I just was doing a set, and a lot of times those guys are just in the room. You don't realize it. You know, Chris Rock is going to go on next, or something happens.
Right.
Anything can happen at any moment sort of at that club. So I was on stage and didn't realize that Louis had been there. I had a great set. I mean, it's just such a great club. You do well such a high percentage of the time there. So I had a great set, and he was back there. I didn't realize he was back there listening, kind of sitting on the steps waiting to go on. And he had a couple jokes that he really liked. And he was like, that was hilarious. And then the manager was like, he really liked it. He was really laughing. He was asking who you are. And then we kind of chatted after. And he like quoted a joke. He was like, is that joke new or whatever?
What?
And I was like, he's like, is that an old joke? And I was like, that's pretty new. And he's like, oh, wow. And then we kind of figured out we were both from Boston. I mean, I knew everything about him.
Right.
I mean, he's like a fucking idol of mine. So
Right.
So that was really neat. And then I think he just has, he knows comedy. He's got his kind of his ear or nose, whatever you put to the grindstone. He has that body part on the grindstone. And like he listened to my podcast, and he knows a lot of the kind of guys of my generation or whatever. And so I kind of got a random, I bumped into him a couple other times. So we talked about, you know, politics or whatever the hell at the Cellar. And then I got an email one time just asking if I could open for him in East Hampton in the Thanksgiving weekend out in the Hamptons. And I did the first show Friday night. And then Saturday we hung out all day. He took me and my fiance out in his boat and
what?
We went to his house. Yeah, out in the Hamptons. And we watched comedy. We watched like Richard Pryor videos and Eddie Murphy. And we were like talking comedy. It was pretty insane in his living room. He made us lunch. It was like really unbelievable, absurd. And it was one of those things where like I became very comfortable with him because he's a nice guy and I know him from comedy. And we started at the same age in the same city. So we kind of like have a lot of similarities, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of became quick buddies. But I had to keep reminding myself. I'm like, this is Louis C.K. This is insane.
Yeah.
And then that night he dropped us off in the boat. My fiance and I, and he was like, all right, I'll see you guys in a little bit. And then I got wild food poisoning, not from what he fed us. The night before, I got so sick, I couldn't do the show, which was brutal. And he was like, don't worry, I'll make it up to you. And then fun fact twist, Jerry Seinfeld filled in for me.
Because a good second fiddle, I guess.
Yeah. It wasn't bad because it was out in the Hamptons. So he has that place out there.
Right.
And Louis texted me, was like, hey man, Jerry filled in, which was, you know, he said it kind of tongue in cheek, but I made the newspaper in New York. I was in the New York Post. It said, when young up and coming comedian Joe List got sick, Jerry Seinfeld filled in. So anyways, that's how we kind of met. And he was like, I'll make it up to you. And then months later, he asked me to open for him on some of these tour dates. And then he asked me to go to Europe. We did the Europe tour. It was unbelievable. And we're still currently doing dates now.
Yeah, man.
It's pretty, it's beyond dream come true because I would like dream of knowing that guy and having him respect me, but to go to like Europe and Paris and London on a private jet with Louis is pretty insane. Unbelievable.
What have you learned from this experience?
Well, one thing I learned is that I would like to be that successful. Like before, I would always like, if I could just make, you know, a good living doing comedy, that would be great. And then you kind of see how that goes and you're like, that's pretty good. I mean, the celebrity seems difficult and unenjoyable to me, but the private jet stuff. But I don't know. I learned, like, I've already knew a lot. I've been doing comedy a long time, so it's hard to kind of put into perspective or exact what I've learned on the tour. But it's just incredible just chatting with him, and it's just fun and amazing. But one thing is that he's a real artist and pushing to do better and be better, even though, you know, he's obviously rich and 25 years in and reached the top, but still trying to strive to be better and find his own new things and stay an artist and go somewhere that he hasn't kind of been artistically, which is inspiring and something that I would like to do, of course.
And he obviously is known for like creating like an hour, you know, a year type of work regimen. But like you seeing him work night after night, like how different will the shows be?
They're pretty similar. I mean, it's sort of a skeleton there, but he's adding a lot of stuff and new lines and changing up words and stuff. It's become I don't watch as much because after a while I've seen it so many times that it starts to take away where you're coming like, oh, I'm hearing a thing for the 30th time. You're starting to be like, I don't want to get in that zone. So I kind of sit out some of his set now, but he changes it up quite a bit and it's always developing. He's always writing because that's how he thinks and sort of is, I think, as a comedian.
Do you adopt that same kind of work regimen? Are you like, you always have a skeleton, but are you always like trying to go off on different avenues?
I'm definitely always trying to write and do new stuff not because I'm trying to do an hour a year or anything like that. I just want to, it feels good to get a new joke working, to have a new bit. Mm-hmm. It's the best feeling in comedy, and it rivals any feeling outside of comedy as well. It's just great to get those words right and get the thought right and have it work. So I'm always writing, but certainly not trying to pump out an hour a year and writing a movie and a play at the same time.
Like, right, exactly.
His work, I think, is certainly superior to mine, but...
But you've also, I mean, you're coming up on 16 years, right?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, I mean, he's got a head start on you.
Certainly.
Yeah, but is your writing process, since you've been doing it almost 16 years, is it more on stage or do you have like a pen to paper type of...
I do both. I try to sit and do... I definitely do more on stage now than I used to. He does completely on stage. He doesn't write at all.
Okay.
He does it all. He'll have a thought. He'll think about it. I think kind of ponder it and listen to sets and then kind of go up there. But he doesn't do any pen to paper. But I'll do pen to paper. I do a lot of writing on my phone just if I have an idea.
Okay.
But I like pen to paper. And then I have a general idea. But I end up kind of riffing on stage a little more and have a little more freedom to do that. So it's a little bit of both for me, I think. Mm-hmm.
Well, you've been, I guess, tour. How long have you been on tour with Louis now?
I guess started in July, mid-July, I guess. And now it's October. And the tour is going through the spring. But it's weird because there's like Europe was constant. It was 17 days. We did like 12 countries in 17 days. But yeah, unbelievable. And then this is now like we did Atlanta last week, and then there's like 2 weeks off, and then I think Chicago or something. So like this time off, it's not as grueling as that one was.
Yeah. So you're also in New York, which is where he's based out of. And an interesting topic that's come up on Louis is like there's been these allegations of like this sexual misconduct, I guess, for lack of a better word. Is that like surprising to you? You being around him and knowing him like that?
I know him well. I don't personally. I mean, I can't. Speak for him or for those people, but there's a lot of rumors, but there's no actual real allegations from a person. There's a lot of like, oh, I heard this and I heard that, and I think that it's hard because people listening to this might say, oh, you work for him or you're friends with him, so you're defending him, but nobody has actually come out and said he did. Like I think one girl talked about it on a podcast and then later took it down and even tweeted like he did not do that to me or anything. So I don't think about it too much, but maybe it's just my own friendship or bias. I know him pretty well, and I don't really think that he's done that. And I think that people that write it and tweet it, they don't know either.
Right.
So it's frustrating. People just decide that you're guilty, and I feel free. Every time I see his name come up on Twitter or Facebook, someone writes, oh, yeah, he's a rapist or whatever. And you're like, you're accusing somebody of doing the worst thing you can do, and you have literally zero evidence of that. And so it kind of bothers me that, not just because it's someone that I admire or like, but the idea of just going, oh, yeah, that guy, he's this, because, well, you have nothing to say. So why don't you, I think you should just kind of relax on that because you don't know what you're talking about. And if, I don't know. But I feel like it's tricky to talk about because you'll get shit one way or the other. So, and I don't know what happened. So,
yeah, it was just interesting to get your point of view of somebody who's been around him so much. And now you're saying like hung out his house on his boat. If like you got like a weird vibe or whatever.
No, none whatsoever. He's cool. A thoughtful guy. He's a great dad. I've met his kids. I've been to his house in New York and in the Hamptons. And he's got two daughters and his daughters are... wonderful, and he's wonderful. I think he's a great, great guy, and unbelievably charitable and giving, and just a really, really great guy. And I think there's a lot of rumors, and that happens, especially in our society. I think people like to try to take people down or point out a flaw, but I don't believe that any of that is real.
Yeah.
Personally, but I'm not an authority and, you know.
Yeah, you're somebody who's close to him, so I thought it'd be good just to get that perspective and
kind of
clear the air, you know.
Asking, yeah.
But we won't make this all about Louis, but it is kind of, it's hard just to mean, like you're saying, you can't believe you're in the Hamptons with this guy and everything.
Yeah.
But it's not like your career up to this point has just been like failure and then, oh, Louis appears. I mean, you've opened up for people like Nick DiPaolo and Dane Cook was another one you worked with. Like,
Yeah. I've worked with Dane years ago. And I opened for a long, long time, longer than I probably would have liked to. But I got to work with Dane and 04, which is when he was kind of breaking pretty big at the time. I mean, that was exciting and awesome. And then I worked with Nick DiPaolo for years. And then Tommy Jonigan was a good buddy of mine for a couple of years, and Gary Gulman as well. So I've worked with a lot of, like, in my opinion, I mean, I think we just named like five of the best comedians of the last 25 years or ever, really, actually. So I got to work with all those guys. It was pretty amazing.
Are those opportunities coming from them just seeing you on stage as well?
Yeah, just personally, like DiPaolo, I worked with at the Comedy Connection in Boston, and then he took me on the road almost exclusively for a long time. And then Gary Gulman and Tommy Jonigan were both good buddies of mine. They weren't, hey, if you're not doing anything else, come do this. So I did that for quite a while.
Is that being on the road like that? Is that when the drinking starts to pick up?
I drank at home and on the road with family and with girlfriend. Yeah, I mean, I drank a lot everywhere.
When did drinking start?
Started probably after high school. I didn't drink at high school at all. Zero.
Wow.
Yeah, not at all until after high school. I was 19 or so, which is late to me, to most people, I think. But and then I just started going hard pretty after just a few months of drinking. I was like, let's see how far we can take this.
Yeah.
a lot of hard drinking for a long time, you know.
Start comedy at 18, by 19, you're drinking. I guess, is there a correlation there?
Yeah, well, at first I would always try to not drink before. I think I had drinks before I started to do comedy, like the weeks before maybe. But I would always try, I don't drink before I go on. And then slowly you're like, I'll have a couple of drinks. And then you're like, well, let's see how drunk I can be on stage. You know, it escalates quickly. So why not? And then there was times where I would drink all day leading up to a show. Mm-hmm. I was at a point, I think, where the shows were always sort of in the way of the drinking. I had that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the road, because you'd go someplace cool and you're like, I just want to go see everything and drink everywhere. And the shows just feel like they're in the way. I still have that feeling now, minus drinking, where the shows are in the way of the fun. Or the football game or whatever it is.
Yeah. You went to Georgia Tech game today, actually.
I did, yeah.
But you like to go to sporting events wherever you go?
Yeah, as much as possible, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd love it.
Were you an athlete?
I played baseball and basketball, and in high school I ran. I ran a lot, cross country, winter track, spring track. And still try to do athletic things, and I love them. As soon as we're done, I'm going to watch the Clemson-Louisville game.
Oh, very nice. All right.
Yeah, pretty good. Well, for a little while, then I'm going to do shows.
Yeah, yeah, but for the final night here at Red Clay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, being hammered on stage, and it's something I always like to ask comedians on here is like an epic bombing story, or like even to the point of where you get booed on stage.
Yeah.
I'm sure you having a drinking regimen, I'm sure some have come up. Epic bombs.
Yeah, well, when you're drinking, it's much easier to have a snap set and kind of lose your mind and get pissed. Now I'm a little more accepting of whatever sort of comes and happens on stage. But I've told the story a few times on podcasts, but the most booing bomb set was opening for Bob Saget.
Oh, my gosh.
At the University of New Hampshire in New Hampshire, obviously. And it was like 3,000 kids in a gym, and they were just fired up to see Saget. And the show started about an hour late because there was a problem with the fire marshal, but they had all the kids outside, and it was in like February in New Hampshire, so it was freezing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was time to start the show, they were literally chanting Saget and like stomping on the bleachers. And it was like the classic comedy formula where the guy comes out and he's like, are you ready for Bob Saget? And everyone was like, ah! And then they were like, well, first we have an opener, Joe List. And they started booing like immediately. And it was like 3,000 kids, or maybe whatever, 1,500 kids, however many were booing, but people booing, and really, it was a melee. But it was fun. That one, it actually wasn't that bad because I knew that they were kind of booing the fact that it wasn't Bob Saget, and it wasn't really the material. It was like they listened to my material and were like, wait a minute, boo. They were just booing like, fuck this guy. And then at one point, some guy yelled out, hey, faggot, bring out Saget. And that was actually pretty enjoyable. I was like, well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Not that I condone that language, but you're like, well, if you're going to throw a rhyme in there, that was fun. And Saget loved it. He was laughing, and I was supposed to do like 20, and I ended up doing like, you know, 14. And I remember turning to the side of the stage and being like, can I wrap this? And they kind of had took pity on me and were like, so I said mercy and left. But that was definitely the most booing situation. I did comedy at a gym one time, like a Gold's Gym.
What?
This guy that ran a gym had an idea to like have comedy during it. So it was a bunch of like, you know, bodybuilders behind me, like dropping the leg press, and then like, you know, married women on like the elliptical machine with like headphones and be like, what the hell is this asshole talking about? And that was pretty bad. So there was been definitely a bunch of weird, bad shows. I mean, there's always bad shows with comedy.
Yeah, that's why I always like to ask comedians, because we all have those stories. It's funny that the guy's like, you being a comedian, you're like, show to Gold's Gym, that's a terrible idea. I'll do it.
Right. You know, like, well, that was interesting because this was like maybe like 2 years into my career, when so I was 19 or 20 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that actually, my buddy was telling me, it was his gig. And I was like, I'll open. He was like, I got to do a half hour at a gym. And I was like, give me $20. I'll do 10 minutes in front of you. And he was like, are you, of course, yes. And so that was like, it wasn't even like a hell gig that I was asked to do. I begged my way on to a gig at a gym. It was pretty, but I, at the time, I wanted to, now I feel like I'm past that point, but I wanted to do comedy every way to experience. I did the Naked Show one time, and I did comedy at a gym, and I've done it like rock and roll. I was like, I want to do every form of stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a certain point, that's no longer beneficial to you, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like doing bad shows is no longer like, oh, this will help me. But early on, I think it does.
How long into your career did it take you before you realized, okay, maybe I don't need to be doing the 2 a.m. show at a coffee shop?
Yeah, probably a while. I mean, I think 10, 12 years. I think if you're making a living, I mean, it's like, all right. But if you're, you know, if you're not, maybe you just keep getting in wherever you can, because it all helps, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're talking about, okay, the rock bottom of comedy. What was your rock bottom of drinking?
Well, I had several, and then you kind of kept going, hung out on the bottom for a while. But like, there was definitely, I blacked out and shit. Can I say shit? This isn't a radio show,
you got
right?
It.
I shit in a girl's shoe, basically on a first date, her roommate. I was in like a kind of a first, not a date, but first time hanging out with this one girl, girl A, and her roommate was girl B. And, I somehow blacked out and ended up in girl B's room and defecated all over her floor and urinated on a rug. It was a whole thing. And I fell through a living room table as well.
Jeez.
And so that was pretty horrible. And that was like the only time I ever was like, you should kill yourself. Like a real thing of like, why don't you? I didn't start contemplating like how to kill myself. Uh-huh. I didn't get that far, but I was definitely like, people would be happier if you died. Oh, I just killed a mosquito, folks.
Nice. As you said, died.
Yeah.
As you said, died, you took
I nailed
a life.
Him, yeah. I try not to take lives, but this mosquito found his way into my hotel room, and he's not welcome here. And if I was better able to get him out without hurting him, and unfortunately, they spread diseases. So I don't know what. You know what? Fuck you. Fuck that mosquito. Yeah. He's dead, and I don't give a shit.
You just prevented us from getting Zika, so thank you.
We could have had tiny-headed babies. if you think you're too small to make a difference, try sharing a tent with a mosquito. Did you ever hear that one? It's an old Buddhist quote, and I like to quote. I like to do Buddhist quotes while killing living creatures.
Yeah, the opposite of Buddhism, I guess.
Yeah, it's fun.
Murder.
Fun to murder and quote the Dalai Lama at the same time. But anyways, yeah. So I like shit in this girl's shoe and urinated. It was just completely shameful behavior. And I remember thinking like, well, I better not drink tonight. I should take a night off. And then ended up drinking later that night. Mm. So there was a lot of like. Just I hated my. I didn't realize till after when I got sober that I really kind of hated myself deeply. So it was just a lot of things. I mean, I was never like, I never like hit any women or cheated or crashed a car, but I definitely just acted like an asshole and a buffoon a bunch, and just didn't respect myself or value myself or my career really. So it was a lot of just like, ugh, I felt like shit, and I was drunk or hungover for. Most of the time for like 10 years.
Yeah.
So I just felt like shit for a long time, just cloudy and anxious and a lot of shame and depression, all that shit. And so it just worked better for me to not drink. I'm just better sober than I am drinking personally.
Yeah. And how has this sobriety affected your comedy?
It's how everything that's happened, you know, like all the big things that happened in my career happened sort of in sobriety. Like, opening for Louis, and then I got to do Letterman. I had a half hour special, and or the half hour, whatever it's called. And I got to do Conan. All that stuff sort of came in sobriety, working at the Comedy Cellar, all that stuff, headlining, having a manager and an agent, all that stuff came in sobriety for me. It definitely turned everything around for me. Because I feel like I was a talented guy and doing pretty well. You know, I had work and I think people respected me or whatever. But it took kind of sobriety to be like, all right, let's focus and try to really do this and work it.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, because I was always a mess. I'm not a guy, like, there's a lot of comedians that there's a thought or aura that these comedians are all like painful and struggly and depressed. But I couldn't work like that. I write and I'm more productive when I'm happy and feeling good, mm-hmm. which happens a lot more in sobriety than it did in drinking for me. So it's definitely helped me creatively and professionally. It just helped all my relationships, which benefits your career.
Did it help? Like, did you have goals at the beginning of comedy, or when you got sober is when you're like, okay, I want to do Letterman. I want to Comedy Central.
Yeah, that was a big thing. And Tommy Jonigan is a guy that really helped me with that as well, like setting goals. Because the only goals I ever set for myself were like, I would like to be a comedian in Boston. I'd like to be a Boston comic, mm-hmm. and then eventually move to New York and then work the road. So I accomplished all of those things, which was another like epiphany in sobriety that I was like, well, I've actually accomplished everything I've ever tried to do. I just haven't tried to do that much.
Right, yeah.
So it became a thing of like, let me do Letterman. I'll just decide that I was like, let me try to do this thing. And then I was able to do that. So then I was like, all right, what do I want to... That sobriety allowed me to go, what do I want to do? What would I like to kind of be? And let me work towards that, as opposed to just being like, let me just try to be a comedian. Which, if your goal is to just be a comedian, that's not hard. You can just go to a show, an open mic or whatever. And you,
right.
Not that it's easy, but just to be a whatever, any comedian is not all that difficult.
So you make the goal to be on Letterman. What did you, because I'm in the middle of a goal, like I want to be on Conan. That's my goal.
Yeah.
That's a goal I set out. I have like thrown into the air and I'm like, now, okay, now how we make that happen, I don't know. But that is now me reaching higher than I ever have before, is being on Conan. So like when you made that Letterman goal, is that, did you sit down and you wrote out like a plan? Like what? How did you approach the goal perhaps?
Well, I went to I went to a couple of tapings actually, but I went with one with Gary Gulman.
Nice.
And I met the producer. They were there. And so Gary was like, do you know Joe? He's great. And they were like, no. And just gave me a card. So I was like, all right, well, that's a big step. I mean, I have the email for the guy personally. I'm here. Right. So that was helpful. I got an itchy nose. It won't stop being itchy. I'm not on coke or anything.
That's
I got
fine.
A loose boog or a hair or something.
They can't see it on the podcast.
All right, great. Sorry. That was just for you, Joel. So anyway, so I kind of had the guy's email and I was like, great. And then I also had the thing that helps where I went with Gary and I kind of went through the whole thing because I was with him. So I was like, all right, you go backstage, you put on your suit, you meet this guy, you go to makeup. I can do this. You kind of had that moment of you go through, you're like, oh, why not me?
Mm-hmm.
And so then the next step was kind of figure out a set. Let me get a set together. And I've been doing comedy a long time. So I was like, well, I have 5 minutes for sure. I can get 5 minutes together. So then I kind of got the 5 minutes together, and then I kind of got lucky again. I was at the Cellar again. A lot of my career revolved around the Cellar, and those producers just happened to be at the show watching another comic, and I had a great set. And then they were like, hey, it's us again. Nice to see you. Make sure you get us that tape. We like this joke and this joke. So that kind of helped. And then the other thing about the Comedy Cellar that's helpful is that they tape all the shows, and you can just ask for a DVD. They'll just hand it to you.
Cool.
And then most people in the industry sort of understand it's the Cellar, so there's some amount of respect, so they'll go, oh great, Cellar, nice. And so it's a good tape, and so I just got them a tape. And Letterman was actually very difficult. It was a lot of back and forth. It went on for about a year and a half, which is insane. Yeah, because they had to change this joke and you had to take that out, and then they just take a while to respond because they're doing other things. And it's, you know, Dave takes breaks, and then Dave announces retirement during my process, which really added a lot to it. It was a whole thing. And then March Madness goes on, and then they're off the air for that week. So it's a whole thing. So it took quite a while. And then actually I didn't hear from them for a while. They kind of approved a set and I felt like I was going to get on. And then I didn't hear from them for a little bit. And then my manager was like, I think we might have to move on. They're just not responding. And I remember telling her, my manager at the time, I was like, just get a no. Get them to say No. I've already had 12 emails back and forth. It's a year and a half. I've invested so much time and energy. I want them to write, no, you're not on the show. I was like, just get that. I don't want to just fade out and be ghosted.
Right.
And then the next email was a date, which was pretty amazing. They were like, oh, it was almost like they were like, shit, this fucking idiot's not going away. Just give him a spot.
Yeah.
And so I got a date and, you know, it was magical. It was great.
Well, I know you've suffered from panic attacks a lot. So yeah. Like before doing Letterman, the late night show, like, were you just a bundle of nerves? Like,
no, I ended up being okay. And that was sobriety. And I kind of got really into a lot of Buddhist stuff and meditating and all this stuff that I'm always dismissive of because I feel like people are like, ah, screw you.
Yeah, you just said Buddhist stuff.
I'm always, because people are like, are you a Buddhist? And I'm like, no, but I read a lot of Buddhist. Like, I got really into, and you have a Thich Nhat Hanh quote in your email.
Yeah.
Which is amazing because that's who sort of changed my whole life. His books I've read about, you know, 25. I have one on me at all times. There's one over there, I'm sure.
Oh, wow.
And that is really helpful. But yeah, I definitely was afraid of panic attacks because panic disorder is something that is inside you. It lives in you. It doesn't just go away. You just kind of manage it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a definite fear that I was going to have a breakdown and lose my mind on stage. Because I had the thing of like, I just picture Dave out there and they're like, the guy can't come out. He won't come out. And then like, that was in my head. But you have to just let that go away. Like, don't even let that manifest itself in you. And I just, like we talked about the moment, I just tried to stay in the moment. Like, I had, what helped me stay calm was like, and this helps in life, and it's, I think it's good advice in general, where you're worrying about something like, well, I'm not doing it right now. Like, I'm worried about the set, but I'm like, but I'm not doing the set right now. I'm sitting in my bedroom, so I don't have to worry about it now.
Mm-hmm.
And then the car ride over, you're like, well, I don't have to worry about it now. I'm just in the car over there. And then I'm like, I'm putting on my suit, but I don't have to worry about the set because I'm just putting my suit on right now. And so I just kind of stayed in each moment, which allowed me to be sort of relaxed leading up to it and doing my breathing exercises. And then also, I got some great advice from comics where my friend Nate Bargatze, who's wonderful,
mm-hmm.
Red State Nate.
Hilarious, yeah.
One of the best, yeah. But he was just saying, I was asking people for advice, and he was like, you're almost beyond being nervous at this point. He's like, you've been doing it so long. It's like, it's 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy Nick Griffin, who's a wonderful comedian and guy.
I interviewed him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's a great, great guy and a tremendous comedian. But he just said, he gave me great advice, and I have the voicemail saved. He said, my advice is, he's like, you don't need advice from me. There's nothing I can, what am I supposed to do? You know,
mm-hmm.
You don't need advice. You know what you do. He's like, everyone has great sets. It's a great crowd. They're hungry. And it's weird because late night you get hyped up, but it's really just a comedy show and you're doing 5 minutes. It's like a short set for a hot crowd. So it's like, you're kind of just going, all right. And then you have to worry about TV. Just worry about the people that are there and they want you to do well. Everyone that's there wants you to do well, and you want to do well. Everyone involved wants you to do well, except for the people on the internet, but they're not there at the time. So
the
fuck
YouTube
them.
Comments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was actually pretty calm and relaxed, and it was almost bizarre. It was almost like a weird experience where I was like, I guess I'm going to do this not particularly nervous. I mean, I had energy going, and
right.
I was anxious to get out there, but I didn't feel nervous. I wasn't close to panic or anything like that. I just felt like, oh, this is cool and amazing and crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I felt really calm, maybe not the right word, because you still are on TV, so you're jacked up, but I felt very at peace. It was really great.
And you mentioned breathing exercises.
Yeah.
Could you kind of expand on that a little bit?
Breathing exercises is a weird term, I guess. Just focusing on my breath. It wasn't breathing exercises. I'm not want to make it sound like I was giving birth. But
maybe I could learn. Listeners could learn.
Just kind of focusing on my breath, my in breath, and my out breath. Because you're breathing through all these things. It feels like you're not, because you're not consciously thinking about it. Because you're just kind of in a panic mode, and that happens not even just in anxious situations, but when you're talking or hanging out, that your body is breathing. It's just second nature, or third or fourth nature, whatever the hell nature it is. You're just not conscious of it. So it can be calming to kind of sit and kind of feel your breath, like almost physically feel your breath going through your nose and in your diaphragm and lungs. It can kind of almost instantly calm you down,
mm-hmm.
which is a thing that Thich Nhat Hanh is always sort of talking about and writing about. And so that really helped to kind of get away from the noise and just be like, and also that you're at home in your body, even though you're in this crazy situation, your body is still your home, and that's where you are, and it's still just you. You know, you're always sort of home in your own body, even if there's chaos going around.
Will you do it for like a count? Like, will you like inhale for seven and exhale for seven? Or
not me like personally, that but that's certainly a thing that people can do. I guess I have done that at times, but just kind of just taking a moment to be like, I'm breathing and I'm a human being and I'm alive, and it's definitely helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this kind of lifestyle something that replaced the drinking?
Yeah, in ways. I mean, I try to be conscious of it, and I don't want to. I mean, I'm still a anxious, nervous guy who's self-conscious and insecure. I don't want you to sound like, I don't want to sound like I'm, you know,
you're doing so good. Guy.
But but yeah, I try to do it consciously throughout the day, and especially when I get nervous or anxious and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Have you done that your whole life, or just when you found sobriety, you found like an alternative?
No, just after sobriety, I was like, I always wanted to be into that. I would do yoga and stuff like that, and I always wanted to kind of be into that because I've always had anxiety and been nervous my whole life, from as early as I can remember. Which is kind of strange, I realized later, for like a 4-year-old kid or a 6-year-old to be like just nervous and like panic at like a family event. So yeah, I kind of went to the bookstore, and the first book I got was a book called Happiness by Thich Nhat Hanh. I was like, oh, that seems like something I want to be happy. And so I kind of started reading all those and got really into that.
You just had a feeling that book would be good for you.
Well, I went to like the Eastern philosophy.
Oh, you were searching.
Eastern religion. Yeah, yeah. Eastern religions or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I like saw happiness. I'm like, oh, that's what I'm looking for. And also I was like, Thich Nhat Hanh just seemed like, oh, that seems like an Asian guy. They seem to know what they're doing over there. And so I got that one, and it was really very applicable and easy to understand and read.
Has that mindfulness helped your comedy as well?
I think so. I think just being able to be relaxed and happy more, where I'm like, oh, let me get some work done. You know, mm-hmm. I want to try to, I think so. Yeah. I think it's all sort of benefited all aspects of my life.
Yeah. Cause when you did the show the first night here, at Relapse here for the Red Clay Festival, there's drums on stage and you're doing a set, and then you just kind of gravitate towards the drums. Yeah. I guess just being in the moment and just flowing.
Yeah, I just kind of felt I always want to hit drums, and then it was just a silly, weird set anyways. It's also weird with a festival like this, there's a lot of comics there.
Yeah.
And so you kind of get self-conscious doing your material. You want to be silly, you kind of make them laugh. And that particular show, there was about 15 audience members and 15 comics.
It was late. Like, it was the late show.
And it was late. Yeah. So I was like, let's just be silly and fun. And I did actually have a moment of like, I want to play the drums, but I don't know if I should. And I was like, well, if I don't, someone else is going to later. And I'm like, this, damn it. I wanted to play the drums, and I'll be jealous that I decided not to.
Right.
Like, let me get over there. And
but you actually played the drums. Like, do you play drums? Like,
I know experience with such it? A tiny, minimal amount. I know how to kind of keep a beat. And
Okay, there's that self-consciousness coming out. There
but
we go.
I mean, I'm not a drummer.
You were playing, though.
Oh,
like,
thanks.
It sounded legit.
Oh, thanks. A few people have said that. But I think if there was a drummer there, they would have been like, get out of here, you piece of shit. Kill yourself.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it's coming back out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Before we get out of here, man, thank you so much for doing this as
well. Yeah, it was fun.
Again, by the way.
I love talking about myself.
Good. Well, yeah, good. I didn't know if you're going to be too cool, though. I don't know how people,
oh, no,
with
I'm
success,
not.
You're like, I'm opening for Louis now. I don't need to be doing, who
no.
is this?
No, you know? No, I'm happy to talk.
So what is, we talked about you starting creating goals and you now achieving those goals.
Like, yeah.
So what are, you clearly have high standards for yourself. What are these new goals?
Yeah, it's hard figuring that out because like Letterman was like a dream since like I was young. And then Conan I grew up watching, so I wanted to do Conan. I got to do that.
Yeah.
And then I guess an hour special at some point. I mean, I grew up watching HBO hour specials. I don't know. That seems more exclusive now. I just want to, I think a lot of comics kind of have this goal of performing to a group of people that came to see me as opposed to just went to see comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That would be ideal. And it's hard. I have to like figure it out, but I don't want to rush into like, I want to do this or that. I kind of am enjoying trying to do well and be as funny as possible. And then I try to have things outside of comedy too. I want to be a good, you know, husband and son and friend and citizen and, so I'm trying to do all of those things while still creating good material. I like albums. I grew up with albums and liking people's albums. I'd like to have a body of work that's sort of like annual, maybe not every year, but year and a half, 2 years. I just put one out
okay.
a couple months ago. It's called Are You Mad at Me? Check it out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm proud of that. So I'd like to have, like Louis described one time, you know, especially it's like your comedy career should be like you're writing a book, and these specials or albums are like each one's a chapter, so you can kind of go through and kind of hear what the person was doing.
Right.
And I'm a big music guy too, so it's like I'd like to do specials as well, but I really liked an album. I like the idea of sitting there in a dark room and listening to it and feeling like you're there. So I'd like to have, you know, sort of annually quality albums. And my podcast, I really like and enjoy doing. So I want
it's a lot
that
of fun,
to grow.
Man.
Oh, thanks. Yeah,
it's Tuesdays with Stories with Mark Norman's on there as well.
Yeah, it's real fun and silly and irreverent, and it's just ridiculous. We're just having fun. So
yeah,
but people seem to really enjoy it. So I want to keep doing that. And I've always wanted to, this is something I wrestle with. I've always wanted to be like a filmmaker when I was really young. And I'm like, I should try to pursue that and write, but it's
like a Scorsese.
Yeah. That's my sort of my guy, Woody Allen, Scorsese. I love those guys. Woody Allen. Now his accusations, I'm a little less, those ones are a little more, again, similarly, we don't know the answer, but that one seems a little more legitimate. He has actual accusers.
Right, yeah,
But anyways, I don't want to go back to that subject, but anyways, the art, the work, I love. Yeah. So
you're just thinking outside of comedy a little bit.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where it's like, you're 34, what are you doing? You didn't go to film school. But I'm like, well, why not? Why not try to pursue that? So that's something I'd like to try to do or whatever.
What are you waiting on?
I'm just lazy, generally.
Oh.
Yeah. So I should start doing... I've made a bunch of weird videos and dumb shit, but... Mm-hmm. So that's something I guess I should work on.
Are there any... That was a nice nugget that Louis dropped you right there. And maybe from Louis or other super successful people you've worked with, are there any other kind of nuggets of knowledge that you've kind of been able to apply to yourself?
I guess... So I've just collected so much stuff. Because it's just wisdom, I guess. You kind of gain stuff from talking to these different people and getting to know everyone. But I guess there's probably more, but none are like coming to my mind right now. That was a fun one. That was a good one. But
no, that's fine.
Yeah, nothing comes off the top of my head, but definitely just trying to continue to be a good comedian. What I consider a good comedian, hopefully my peers do, and I think they do, unless they're lying.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Absolutely, man.
So I just want to be funny and a good person.
But you want to be the guy. It's cool to open for Louis, but you're like, I want to be in the lights. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, and I'm headlining a lot of my own show. I mean, I'm on the road most of the time. I'm headlining my own shows. I don't want to make it sound like I'm just doing 8 minutes for Louis. I mean, I'm missing a bunch of Louis shows to headline my own shows and stuff. So I'm out there and trying to put together. I kind of have a new 45 or so from the album, so I just want to keep hammering away at that and try to do another one of those.
Well, please let the people know where they can keep up with you and all that jazz.
Twitter and Instagram. I love Instagram, at Jill List Comedy. I'm very proud of my Instagram account, at Jill List Comedy on both of those. And then Tuesdays with Stories is my podcast. It's free every Tuesday on iTunes. It is a comedy podcast. Please don't take any of it serious. And those are those. And then my album is called Are You Mad at Me? And that's on wherever the hell they sell albums. So
great. Well, before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
I love you. Thanks for listening. And life is very enjoyable. And have fun out there, everybody.
All right. Joe List, thank you for being on Hot Breath, man.
Thanks, Joel. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
We did it.
Thanks, man.
Beautiful, yeah. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right, Hot Breathiverse, you know the drill. If you found this episode as helpful as I did, pay it forward. Hit up Joe List on social media. Let him know you enjoyed the episode. Tell comics in your scene, or if you're out in another scene, tell comics that we at you, alright? That's how we grow. You clearly enjoy this episode. Those of you that this is your first episode listening in, welcome. We appreciate you. Welcome to what we call the Hot Breathiverse here. If you want to connect with other listeners directly, I have created a Facebook page called the Hot Breath Comedy Network. Just go on Facebook, search it, request to join. On there, you can get more comedy game and just connect with other listeners around the world. Around the world, we are making an impact, hearing from people from outside of America, all the way into Montreal and Ireland and Europe. Is Ireland in Europe? I don't know. I have a liberal arts degree. Okay. That being said, the Hot Breathiverse is growing, and it's thanks to you spreading it. So if you'd like to even support the podcast even more, go to hotbreathpodcast.com. There's a great way on there you can support it, as well as merch for yourself, wearing the uniform while you listen.
blogs are over there. It's really become like the hub of Hot Breath. So if you like Hot Breath, you'll love the website. And of course, subscribing on iTunes and our YouTube page as well, rating, reviewing it. That iTunes review really does go a long way. A lot of people have told me they found the podcast just by searching on iTunes. So if you haven't left a review yet and you know you should, go do that real quick and let other comics get this comedy game. So all that being said, this is Joel Byers. Joe List is a big time writer. I love writing as well. I love to help you with writing. I do Skype sessions with people to help them with writing their material or turning their dirty material into clean material, or I've done set reviews as well. I do that. I'm really just here to help you get better at comedy faster, however I can do that. You can head on over to hotbreathpodcast.com, shoot me a message, joelbyerscomedy.com. Shoot me a message or get more info about the classes I offer and such. But thank y'all so much for the support. I'm feeling under the weather, but better that we are doing this together as I'm recording this in a hot parking lot here in Charlotte after a hot show. Shout out to Tara Brown for an amazing brunch show she does at the Charlotte Comedy Zone. So all that being said, man, and woman, and hot brethren, and hot sisterain. Sorry, that ibuprofen's kicking in, so I'm starting to get a little loopy. So, get on with your lives. Keep grinding out there. You reaching out and telling me you love this show keeps me alive. So, keeps the show alive. I mean, I'll be alive, but it really does bring and breathe life into my day when I hear that you enjoyed it and that you shared it and that you reached out to our guests to let them know. So get out there, keep grinding. It ain't easy, but it's worth it. I appreciate y'all so much. Thank you to my wife, Erin Byers, for making this theme song. And until next Monday, right here on Hot Breath.
Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.